Fan Junkies Radio is brought to you by FanJunkies.net, where sports meet social networking.
Gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Fan Junkies Radio. I'm your host, Jonathan Ragus. Alongside me, as always, my good friend, Mike McShane. Mike, what's going on, buddy?
I'll tell you, one word, Jonathan, cold.
I have two words, flipping cold.
Oh, my goodness. It is. It's brutal. Absolutely brutal. We haven't seen temperatures like this, I think they said, in over 2 years.
Well, and, are you scared to leave your house?
Yes, I am.
Really?
No end in sight. No end in sight for at least a week.
Well, we need it, man. We got to kill off all those cold germs and flu germs and everything else that's been going around lately.
I guess that's one way to look at
it. Let me tell you, man. I was walking outside last night, man, and I thought my feet froze to the cement. It was
bad.
Oh,
my gosh. I don't know how the folks up in Minnesota, Michigan, Montana, North Dakota, I don't know how they do it.
I don't know.
I would run right away.
I don't mind it. So much is that, you know, spring's coming and, you know, whatever. I look forward to that. But I can't be in a place where it's either cold 24/7 or hot 24/7. I just can't do it.
Ugh.
I need my balance. I need my mix, Mike.
Well, I'll tell you, it wouldn't bother me. It's
well,
70 degrees plus every single day.
Oh, I thought you were saying 73 years old. You were scaring me there for a second. Right? You were scaring me, man.
I got a long way to go before I get there.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Well, it's Tuesday. It's Wednesday, excuse me. So we're going to go with a little bit of an open forum Wednesday here. Going to throw out the number 347-237-5373. If you're interested in talking sports, you have a comment, you have an opinion, or you just want to let us know something, or if you want to tell Mike. Nah, you don't want to tell Mike anything. Anyway, give us a call, 347-237-5373.
Let me know what it's like to live in Minnesota. Tell me how you put up with that nonsense. I don't know how you do it, seriously.
Or let them know what it's like to live in Florida right now, because from right here at 65 degrees, they get the sweatshirts out because they're so used to it. Terrible. Well, we have some things to talk about.
Yeah.
Kind of a lot of things to talk about. And we're going to talk NFL first. So let's get to these allegations coming out of Oakland. Jerry Rice, Tim Brown, a couple other people came out, throwing some allegations, basically saying that former Oakland Raiders coach Bill Callahan sabotaged the Raiders in their Super Bowl loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 10 years ago. Callahan came out saying, not true, it's ludicrous, amongst other things, Mike. From what you read about this, I just can't wrap my head around this. I've never been a fan of Bill Callahan, so I'm not too shocked to hear of something like this. But at the same time, you know, would a head coach really do this?
Yeah. The whole thing, you know, when you say you can't wrap your head around it, I'm right there with you. You know, first of all, this is Super Bowl that took place 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And so the question becomes, why would Tim Brown come out with this kind of a story now? Now, let's not forget, Tim Brown right now is on the ballot for Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Now, how this potentially might help his Hall of Fame chances or not, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just throwing that out there as an aside. Keep that in mind. Tim Brown is on the ballot right now for Hall of Fame. I don't understand why, if in fact, first of all, I think you almost have to take the story, and I think you have to break it down in a couple of different ways. One, let's assume that there's some merit to it for a moment.
Yeah.
Let's play devil's advocate and say there's some merit to it.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you wait 10 years to come out and make these comments? Okay? That's the big, big question I have. You know, I made a point to you pre-show. Bill Romanowski, who played on the opposite side of the ball, came out yesterday and vehemently denied any possibility or any complicity in any kind of issue with this.
Yes.
However, both Jerry Rice, Tim Brown, and then later on Charlie Gardner have all indicated that for some reason or another, on Friday, before the Super Bowl was to be played, the entire game plan was changed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one has to ask that question. Why would you change the game plan 2 days before you're going to play the biggest game of your life?
Yeah.
But I just find the whole thing just so improbable that any coach that potentially would be sitting on the precipice of making history, being a Super Bowl winning coach, would purposefully throw the game. Now, apparently, I mean, there were insinuations as well that Bill Callahan absolutely hated being with the Raiders. He hated being head coach. The only reason that he was there was because Gruden had brought him when he went to the Raiders before he went over to the Buccaneers, and he came along for that, and then ultimately ended up getting the head job when Gruden went to the Bucs. So I don't know. The whole thing is bizarre, John. Yeah. I mean, what do you make of it?
I really don't know what to make of it. You know, I read the comments from Pim Brown. You know, and basically, I'll throw out one of the comments right now, and I'm going to quote this. This is from Tim Brown. He goes, we all called it sabotage because Callahan and Gruden were good friends, and Callahan had a big problem with the Raiders, you know, hated the Raiders. You know, only came because Gruden made him come. So, whatever it is, if he did sabotage it. But there's another story that comes out of this, too, as well, Mike, because we talk about John Gruden a lot, how, he's kind of got a rap of being this genius coach because he won a Super Bowl. If this comes out as being true, does Gruden still have that tag on him?
Okay.
Did you think about that?
Yeah, connect the dots for me on that one. Run that by me again.
No, I'm saying we have talked about Gruden before where, possibility for the Eagles, we've said, not really a great team in Tampa Bay, didn't really do a good job in Oakland, but he won that Super Bowl, which puts him in as a genius head coach.
Yeah.
If Callahan sabotaged his team to lose, does Gruden still get that tag as being a genius head coach?
Yeah, I got you.
To the Buccaneers.
Well, I don't think it would. You can't put any lack of luster on John Gruden, because then
John Gruden, I'd put it on the whole team. So.
Well, yeah, but what I'm saying is it would almost seem like there was complicity between the two teams.
Well, that's what Tim Brown is kind of going at here.
I think what Tim Brown was actually insinuating was that the game was thrown from the standpoint of changing up the game plan so dramatically that it put the Raiders at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's saying. I don't think he's insinuating that there was complicitness between the two teams.
Yeah. They were going to go a whole run-oriented attack on Tampa Bay.
Right, exactly.
At the last second, they go pass-heavy offense.
Right.
And for a guy like Jim Rice to come out, this could be Jerry Rice to come out and say, I agree with Tim Brown. Jerry Rice is not the person you would think would come out and lie about something like this.
Right.
That's not Jerry Rice. That's not the Jerry Rice everybody knows. That's not the Jerry Rice you and I know, Mike.
Right, exactly.
Do you side with Bill Callahan and a guy like Bill Romanowski, who to me has no credibility at all anymore for being a liar, or do you side with guys like Tim Brown and Jerry Rice over this?
Well, okay, I'm going
to
throw a question.
Is more people going to come out? What kind of evidence could come out to basically show that they were right in what they said, Tim Brown and Jerry Rice? I mean, you know what? Is this going to end here, Mike?
Okay, I go back to my initial question. Number one, why would you wait 10 years? All right, that's number one. Number two, what responsible, professional, reputable coach sitting on the precipice of potentially being, and mind you, it's not like Bill Callahan's got, three or four Super Bowls in his pocket, okay? What sort of coach? I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
All right? The pride kicks in. When you are at the biggest game of your entire life, when you are on the biggest platform in sports, you are not going to throw the – I don't care who you are. You're not going to throw the game.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I'm certainly not going to throw the game simply for the purposes of, I'm pissed off at the Raiders.
Yeah.
There better be something more in it for me than that. If you know where I'm going. I mean, there better be something.
I agree. Like I said, I don't – you know what? I don't necessarily think this is done. I think more players are going to come out to either come to the defense of Bill Callahan, and others are going to come out coming to the defense of Tim Brown. So So, you know, this is, you know, I think in the end you're going to see a division and it's going to be an equal split down the middle and you're not going to know what's the truth.
Well, and that's what makes this story, I think, somewhat compelling.
Yeah.
Because it does seem to be drawing up lines.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, where are the lines being drawn? It appears it's being drawn offense versus defense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So your offensive players are saying, yeah, it kind of looks like there was something to that. Defensive players are coming out saying, oh, don't worry about it. Hold on. Back up the bus.
Yeah.
I guess the question I have, Jonathan, does the NFL step in and do they have to do an investigation on something like that?
You know what? I would think they would have to, especially since Tim Brown, you know, said on 103.3 ESPN that he's been talking about this for 10 years, he said.
Well, wait. If he was talking about it for 10 years, he was talking about it, you know, to his pillow.
Yeah, but to who? Exactly. I mean, was he talking to these little AM stations around the country that, you know, gets no publicity whatsoever? I mean, now he's on ESPN Radio.
Yeah, come on.
So they're going to pick that up, ESPN. They're going to float that out there to just everybody that could possibly get it. So,
you know, is this Tim Brown trying to get attention to propel himself potentially to, you know, into the Hall of Fame?
I don't think he would have to. I think his numbers speak for itself. You know, I honestly don't think Tim Brown would need to go to that kind of level. And honestly, I don't remember Tim Brown being that kind of person either. I always thought Tim Brown was kind of quiet.
I agree with you. I don't know if it would necessarily be that kind of a motivation. I think this
That's just poor.
I think this could actually hurt his chances if it were to turn against him.
I honestly believe it would. But, you know, and now he has a Hall of Famer backing him, though, too, at the same time. So, like, where do you go with it? You know, it's
a bizarre story, one that I almost kind of wish really would just dry up and go away, because I think in some respects it's kind of a waste of our time.
I agree.
But at the same time, if there's anything to it, I think it requires that the NFL step in and has to address it. You know, you understand, I'm kind of...
Yeah, listen, you know what, if it starts to reach that level where it's going to be, you know, a real big problem, not just for the Raiders, but for the NFL itself, that's when they're going to step in. They're going to have to step in.
Yeah.
They have no choice but to step in. Right now, I think they're just going to let this, you know, just leave it alone. Let's see if it dries out by itself. But if more and more players come out and they start accusing Bill Callahan of doing something, whether it be, you know, from the Eagles, from his time with the Raiders,
right,
when he was the Jets or whatever, I mean, or Nebraska or Wisconsin or whatever, if other allegations start coming out, you know what? The NFL is going to have to get involved.
Yeah, I would think so.
You know what? Let's grab a phone call real quick. We got 646. I believe this is Joe from the Bronx. Joe, is that you?
Yeah, man. This is me, live and in living color. What's up, guys?
Hey, Joe. How are we doing today, man?
Freezing.
I was going to say, it's got to be cold up there too, right?
Oh, yeah, man. I just came in. I just came in literally like a few minutes ago, and I'm thawing out right now, man. It's freezing out there.
We hear you, man. We hear you. So what's on your mind, Joe?
Nah, well, as far as what you guys are talking about, this whole Raiders thing, I mean, it's just crazy how, as Mike mentioned, why 10 years later? I mean, if this thing was such an issue, I think that immediately after the game, a red flag would have came to the, you know, to these players' minds. Whereas, wait a minute, what the hell? We went from one thing and did a complete 360 opposite, and we lost the game. What the hell? He figured there would be headlines about it immediately after that. There was, as far as I remember, there was no headlines regarding that.
Right.
Not after the game. Not a week later. Not a few years later. We're talking 10 years later.
Right. Absolutely.
So that strikes me as very weird, but I agree with Jonathan, I agree with you in the sense that Tim Brown, Jerry Rice on one side, and then look who we have on the other side, Romanowski. His track record is not exactly clean, so you kind of got to believe that they're on to something. I just don't understand the whole 10 years later thing. That's baffling to me.
Yeah, and if Tim Brown was talking about this for 10 years already, like he said, where was he talking about this? How come we haven't heard? Because this is something that just doesn't get thrown under the rug. It doesn't get swept under the rug. This is something that as soon as somebody like Tim Brown, with his stature as a former NFLer, says something, this is going to be picked up. This is big news.
Well, see,
pretty much. I mean, how does ESPN not pick it up? I mean, that's crazy.
Well, it's ESPN, so.
Well, ESPN's a joke. That's a whole other thing, but... What I think would be a good move on the NFL's part is, why don't they rebroadcast that game in its entirety before the Super Bowl on the NFL Network.
Well,
they
give fans
the opportunity to see it and judge for themselves.
I don't think it's so much that, you know, that there would be anything necessarily apparent about the way the game was played. I think that the claims made by Tim Brown are more about the fact, why did we move away just 2 days before the game? Why did we move away from the strengths of our game, which is what we had practiced for all week long? I mean, Brown actually said, this is, you know, we had the game plan in our hand. We had the plays picked out, and those were the ones that we practiced on the field up until Friday. By Friday, we changed the complete game plan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if necessarily sitting and watching the game, again, whether any of this kind of thing would be necessarily apparent, except for unless you were on the inside of it, as Tim Brown was and Jerry Rice was, unless you were on the inside of it and go, wait a minute, why all of a sudden did we change this game plan? That's the first thing. The other question, though, that I would throw out here, gentlemen, is if it and I've played both sides of this. I've looked at this, you know, in a very devil's advocate sort of way.
Mm.
Let's just say for a moment that it's all BS, that Tim Brown is making it up.
Yeah.
All right, that this is nonsense. Well, okay, then my question then also goes to, well, what's Tim Brown's motivation? Why would he do this?
Yeah, why would he do this? And why would other players come out and
back
stick with Tim Brown? Because now you have Frank Middleton, too, who was the offensive lineman for the Raiders. He came out and said, you know, Bill Callahan hated us. He didn't want to see a lot of us succeed because of who we were. I do believe Callahan had bad feelings against us, but to say he threw the game, I can't really say that. So that's basically playing both sides of the story there. So it's tough. You know, listen, the Raiders weren't prepared for this Super Bowl matchup. As you saw, Rich Gannon, 5 interceptions, 3 of them returned for touchdowns.
Right.
They were just not prepared for this game. And if they were going to go for a run attack system, which they really didn't do that whole season, because I believe they threw like over 620-something passes that year, which is a record for them. You know, I just can't see why all of a sudden Callahan would want to switch to a run system when they've been a heavy pass attack all season long, train them to do that, practice with the run system, and then all of a sudden, boom, go right back to the pass attack right before the game.
Because I think at that particular time it had been diagnosed that running schemed game against the Bucs would have given them a greater advantage. If you recall that year, the Buccaneers had a pretty good defense, but they were very, very shoddy against the run.
Okay, so then why did Bill Callahan switch back from what they did for practices leading up to the Super Bowl back to the pass-heavy attack?
And that is wherein lies the question from Tim Brown, and that's why he's claiming that, in fact, it was a thrown game.
Yeah, and they also said, you know, and Brown and Rice were also blaming Callahan for switching that up, being the basic reason of why Barrett Robbins was suspended for the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So
weren't they in that year? Weren't the Raiders like a top 5 team in passing? I believe.
Oh yeah.
That year?
Yeah. Raiders had a monster season. They were the favorites to win that Super Bowl. The Raiders. So.
Well, Gannon was having a career resurrecting season that year.
Oh, Gannon had a monster season in 2002.
Hey, switching gears real quick, guys. What do you think of the latest nonsense coming out of the mouth of Bruins owner Jeremy Jacobs and, you know, his comments post-NHL lockout? I mean, this guy does not have a clue. This guy really does not give a rat's you-know-what about the fans. I don't understand how guys like him are allowed to own an NHL franchise if they're going to continue to have this mindset that they have right now in regards to the league. I mean, if it wasn't for him, we would have had hockey a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, I'm reading right now about, you know, the latest that's coming out of his mouth. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, seriously? This guy has no clue.
Yeah. No. Well, I read some of the statements. It's Jeremy Jacobs. I mean, you know, there's really not much I could say about that. You know, I've never really liked the guy in the first place. And he's still finger pointing. You know, enough is enough. With the season's done, you know, we're already going 3 games into the season. That's it. Stop with the finger pointing. Just worry about that. You know, and, you know, he's still putting out, I don't know what he did. What was it, like a news conference he did, I believe, Joe?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know what, enough is enough.
Well, wait a minute. We had a couple.
And it's like he has a good team. He has a team that's a legit Stanley Cup contender. It's not like you're the owner of the Phoenix Coyotes.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Well, there were a couple of players, however, who made similar comments, and we didn't necessarily get perturbed by them. There were players that said basically the same thing, that you know, when it came right down to it, nobody won in this lockout.
No, nobody won in the lockout. Absolutely.
I don't think anyone won. I agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, his comments, Jacob's comments, yeah, I agree with you. You know, shut up and play the game now. It's over with. Let's get past it and let's try to get the fans' minds on to something else. But at the same time, his comments really are no different from what I've heard from other people.
No, but, you know, now it's I think what Joey's going at is, you know, 3 games in the season, why would you have to issue that now?
No, I hear you. I hear you. I agree.
Enough. I mean, the lockout's over. All that is behind everybody. You know,
right.
We have a new CBA agreement. You know, we'll at least have 8 years of hopefully hockey that won't be stopped, and that's it. You know, there's no reason to bring it up now.
Right.
And, you know, continue to point fingers and say, well, I wanted the season to start in October. It should have, blah, blah, blah. It's the other side. So.
Right.
Exactly. It's just bringing bitterness back, and it's going to leave that bad taste in fans' mouth. You know, right now fans are excited the hockey's back. Don't take us back to the lockout. You know, let's just move forward and go from there, and that's it.
Absolutely, Joe. We agree with you, buddy. But, Joe, as usual, we got a couple of callers on the line as well, so thanks for calling in, man, and, you know, hopefully we'll talk to you Friday again.
You all right, buddy.
Thank you, man.
Okay, bye.
See you,
Joey. All right, we got another call on the line, too. 620 area code, I believe. Sean from Kansas?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Sean, how's it going, buddy?
Good. Just wanted to see how you guys are doing. I was wanting to talk a little bit about, like I said, I heard you guys talking a lot about, you know, the whole Raiders team allegations. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if guys, you know, like Barrett Robbins, you know, some of the names that were on that squad from that year would come out and just say, hey, this is what happened. We were screwed because he changed it on us. And
yeah.
I'm like, big whoop, I don't care. But at this
others will come out. You know, it's not going to take time, but others will come. We already have Frank Middleton, Rich Gannon, you know, Jerry Rice. Bill Romanowski made comments already, but, you know, there's going to be other people that are going to come out eventually. It's either going to play itself out until it dries up, like Mike said, or it's going to get to the point where it's going to start embarrassing the NFL and they're going to have to get involved.
Exactly. I mean, and if it begins to become an embarrassment, then obviously the NFL's got to step in. I frankly would like to see the whole story just go away. I don't think there's really anything to it. And when I first read the story yesterday morning as it broke, I said, oh, this is a bunch of nonsense. But, you know, I think, unfortunately, what gives it some validity is when you've got a name like Jerry Rice stepping out. That's when you start to sit up and your eyebrows go up. What I don't understand, and I'm going to keep coming back to it, is, listen, you could have both sides of the ball. You could have the entire team come out and make a statement one way or another on it. Why did everybody wait so long?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, if there would have been something wrong with the coaching style, I mean, I would have actually kind of gone to the coach about it, would have just told him, hey, why did you change it all of a sudden?
Mm-hmm.
But one of the other things I wanted to talk about is, kind of switching the subject here for a minute, is have you noticed there's been so many changes for the Raiders head coaching carousel over the 15 head coaching changes in the last 10 seasons?
Yeah.
The Raiders cannot stick with one head coach for longer than two seasons.
Well, they're terrible. You know, there's really no other way to describe it, but they're just terrible. So, you know, every time they go down and, you know, I mean, they got Dennis Allen now and he's there, but you know what? I don't think you can necessarily blame the coaches. You have to blame the players as well. And, you know, all the general management and everything. It's definitely, you know, an organization that's not helping itself to win. So,
well, let's not forget too. It's an Al Davis organization.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
even with Al Davis dead,
exactly.
It's still an Al Davis organization.
Yeah, that's
absolutely.
Correct. That's correct.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's. I mean, you know what? Now Mark Davis is the majority owner now.
Exactly.
So,
does he
have a little bit of his father in him? What do you think?
Well,
I think so.
It's not dissimilar to the Steinbrenners.
No, yeah, It is. Well, I think George was a lot smarter.
I agree with you.
You know, and he knew what to do. His sons don't. Who knows? Maybe this could be opposite. You know, Al Davis was a pretty smart guy, and he showed that his knowledge of football was terrible, I would say, over the last 15 years. And hopefully his son could turn it around a little bit. Who knows?
Yeah, well, anyway, like I was saying, like, I've been a huge fan of the Raiders for years. And like I said, I'm kind of just going to blow this whole thing out of the water, and I'm sure this is going to be something new for you guys hearing this. But I wanted to say that the reason I think the Raiders lost the game, it wasn't because the change of the strategy, but because the coach had pushed him so hard during the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
He pushed him too hard during the regular season, and they were too exhausted to play very well.
I mean, that's. I suppose that's possible. I mean,
it's feasible.
You know, look at the score, 48-21. You know, yeah. I mean, you know, that's possible. I mean, I for one, I mean, you know, I'm going to go back to and you know, we're talking about professional athletes here. You are on the biggest platform of the entire sports world. All right, not just your league, not just your sport, but of all of the sports world. This is the Super Bowl, man. You get up for that one.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. But you know, it's good that we're getting the opinions here of a Oakland Raiders fan on it. So
absolutely.
Yeah, you know, Sean, thanks, man, for calling in, man. We really appreciate it, buddy. Yeah, it's tough. You know, it's you know. Let's win, baby. That hasn't been a good motto for the Oakland Raiders. In the
really. I guess nobody heard that year.
Nah, not at all. Or for the last, what, you know, how many years now going on it. So
exactly.
You know, sticking with football real quick and talking about a former Oakland Raider, Jamarcus Russell, who hasn't really played a game in the NFL since, I believe, 2009, is trying to attempt a comeback, Mike.
Yeah.
Jamarcus Russell, who wasn't a good quarterback as it is, trying to make it back in the NFL. You know, do you see anybody signing this guy or what?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, first of all, let me respond to Jamarcus Russell making a comeback. Good luck with that, dude.
Nice laugh. Love it.
But, you know, listen, let's think about this for a moment. Is there a tactical reason for this? Well, it might be. Because, you know, I've only been saying now since probably the early part of December, this is a quarterback-starved league that we're going to be looking at in the off season.
Yeah.
All right?
Not only for starting, though, but for backup.
Exactly.
And third string, believe it or not.
So, you know, Jamarcus Russell was touted. I mean, my goodness, were we sold a bill of goods on this guy?
Oh yeah.
If he feels that he can do it, I give him all the credit in the world. Go, you know, go do a whole bunch of tryouts with a bunch of teams, and if it works out for you, good for you. I wish you all the luck in the world. It might be successful, Jonathan, because as I said, you know, we're looking at not the greatest quarterback. First of all, we don't have many out there in free agency.
No,
and
no,
then number two, as I pointed out, numerous times, the draft is not going to produce a great lot here.
Yeah, you know, and you know what, you also have to think of his reasoning for coming back as well. Is it because he misses the game of football and really wants to be back in the NFL? Is it because, you know, we did hear about his problems with all the money he owes? And all this other stuff.
Well, as I said,
is that a main reason? You know.
And see, that's why I couched it as, is this a tactical maneuver? Because if there was going to be a time for somebody like this to try to make a comeback, this would be the year to try it. Because as I just said, there's a dearth of quality QBs, and a lot of teams are going to be out there looking for them. And as you point out, not just the starters, but his backups.
Yeah, but is Jamarcus Russell a quality quarterback even as a second or third string?
Well,
that's a question you got to ask yourself.
Well, I hear you, and obviously on first blush we would say no because we're comparing it to what we saw for what, three seasons out of the Raiders.
Yeah.
Hey, look, guys can grow up, they can mature. Maybe the guy, and that's what I say. Listen, go.
We've seen it. We've seen it before.
Yeah, go try out. Go try out and see what happens.
Hey,
you know,
if he comes back and turns it around, power to him, man. You know,
absolutely. You know, I'm thinking of Kurt Warner in his later years. Boy, oh boy, we were just talking about Rich Gannon and what kind of a season he had there 10 years ago with the Raiders. And as I said,
Doug Flutie.
Flutie, and I'm also thinking of the other. Oh, darn it all! It'll come to me. Other Raiders QB who beat my Eagles in 1981. Plunkett.
There you go. Yeah, Jim Plunkett.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Who was, you know, older than God's dirt, you know, when he played that game. So, it's possible, and that's why I say I wish him all the best. Go run a bunch of tryouts with a bunch of teams. And if there's ever going to be a season that a younger, and he's still fairly young. He's only 27, right?
Oh, yeah, he's young. I think he only played, two or three years in the NFL?
Right.
So he's a young guy.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's still.
He's 27.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. So, I wish him luck, and I hope it works out.
Yeah, I guess we'll see what happens.
Listen, there's nothing I think you and I would love more than next year in the fall to be talking about the comeback story of Jamarcus Russell. Everybody in sports journalism and sports talk, what do we love more than anything else? We love the comeback story.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I'm going to tell you right now, it would be great.
Yeah. Quick question, though. Where do you see Jamarcus Russell trying out if he comes back?
Oh, my goodness.
You know what? Just throw out three teams, right? You know, right off the top of your head.
There could be so many places. Hey, how about your Jets?
You say my Jets, I'll strangle you. We already had talks about crap coming to the Jets and Michael Vick. That's not happening. So,
how about the KC Chiefs?
Chiefs, absolutely. Raiders themselves, what do you think?
Maybe. Now, you know something? I don't know if they'd go down that road again.
Well, as a backup.
Yeah, I don't know if they'd
They're locked up for Carson Palmer for too long of a time, so he ain't going anywhere.
I don't think he's going to fit in with a Chip Kelly type of offense, so I don't think it's going to work out of Philadelphia.
What about Jacksonville?
Would McCoy do that down there? He might. I don't know.
We're talking about him as a backup, either a second or a third stringer. So, you know, we're not talking about Jamarcus Russell as a starting quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, but I'm thinking at that age, and if he were to wow people, he could be a starter. It's very possible.
Well, you know what? He's going to have to get into a game to show what he has.
Well, KC.
And is Marcus Russell going to get into a game?
KC, I could think it could be a real possibility.
Yeah.
I think that's a real possibility.
I don't know. I have a feeling that Castle is going to still be a starter there. So.
We'll see on that. I think Andy Reid's going to
somebody like a Matt Flynn there's a lot of guys out there. Alex Smith. I mean, you know, so you know, Jamarcus Russell is going to take a backseat to a lot of these guys that are hitting the free agent market.
Only because of his previous reputation.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. All right, Mike. NHL time.
Well, we can go there.
Do you want to go there?
It's an interesting. It's things are setting up interestingly, and they're setting up early.
Yeah.
Why the heck not? I mean, at least for a couple of minutes, let's take a look at where things stand, because I think there are a handful of surprises.
Yeah.
You know, I've had a lot of people come back at me and go, "Oh, calm down. It's early." Yes, it is early. You're right. But you know when it's going to be late, Jonathan? It's going to be late when we're about 12 games in.
Well, you know what? To me, going 6 to 8 games in, I think it's really late, because as we spoke about it, the playoffs started as soon as the season started.
Yeah, I think
that was. This is around the time All-Star break coming up. If it was a full season, that you would need to start playing playoff hockey. This is the time. Some of these teams are not playing playoff hockey, but you can't blame the players. No pregame, no camp, conditioning is off. Players are already getting injured. Right off the top of my head, Aaron Asham played one game already with them against Pittsburgh on Sunday, and he's already got a groin pull. So
the playing field, however, with regard to training camps and preseasons, the playing field there is level, Jonathan. Everybody had the exact same amount of time.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know what? Teams that are hot right now, they may not be hot in a few weeks. I don't necessarily say you have to worry, Mike, but show a little concern.
That's where I would be. Okay, now let's just run through a couple of surprises. Rangers 0-2, and they are who are they playing? They're playing Boston tonight.
Again tonight, yes.
Yeah, you're playing Boston tonight. Now, is that at MSG or is that in Boston?
That's at MSG.
Okay, so I'm not saying it's going to happen, but hey, you could drop the 0-3. Philadelphia's already 0-3. We've got LA at 0-2.
Yes.
You got Phoenix at 0-2. You got Calgary's not necessarily a big surprise.
Carolina. I mean,
Carolina. Carolina, that's
we have a lot of things. And,
oh,
and Washington.
Washington 0-2. Right.
And Washington. So.
Yeah, and I watched that Washington game last night. excuse me. Washington was terrible.
Yeah, listen, 4 points separates everybody in the Atlantic. Same for other things, except for Central. Chicago, 6 points, only team 3-0 right now. It's not a far gap. Teams can catch up. But it takes time to start to build that camaraderie, be cohesive with these new players that are on these teams. And that takes time, and that's what that's what camp and preseason is for.
Right.
They didn't have that. So, you know, to get these chemistry going in these games that are, I hate to say must win, Mike, but games that you just have to win right now.
Well, and, I made the comment last night on the Frat House Facebook page. And I said to all of the teams out there right now, to all of the fan bases out there, from teams like Philadelphia and New York and Los Angeles and Carolina, I said, there's no point in pressing panic buttons yet.
No.
But if you go 3-9, then I think you're going to want to press a panic button.
Yeah, well, if you see these teams that are not playing up to par, Philadelphia, Rangers, Kings, Phoenix, Detroit as well, because they're 1-2 right now.
Yes.
If you get to games, let's say 6-8 to 6-12, that's when you're going to have to start worrying.
Correct. I would say early panic button at 3-9, because when you're at 12 games, that's a quarter of the season now gone.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And remember what you and I talked about on Monday. We said 25 would be about where you're going to need to be to make the playoffs.
To the playoffs, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
I just mentioned I watched the Washington game last night. I've watched all three of the Flyers games up to this point. I've watched your Rangers games. I'll probably watch it again this evening.
Yes.
What's consistent in the fact that these teams are not winning? Here's one of the things that I'm going to say right outright is consistent in why they're not winning. Sloppy play.
I was just going to – sloppiness. That's what it's been for all these teams that haven't won yet or are just sitting at one win right now.
Sloppiness. Sloppy play. They're not hitting their passes. They're not clearing the zone. Defensively, they're not getting the puck out of the zones. And moving through the neutral zone has been difficult.
Yeah. And you know what? I don't know how it is in Philadelphia. I watched a few Flyers games, but of course I concentrate more on my Rangers. It's not even the new guys that I'm worried about. It's the guys that were on the team previously.
Except for the fact that I think there is a lack of – and again, this might just be a matter of a little more playing time, a lack of chemistry.
Absolutely. Well, listen, you know what? Just like in New York, you got Rick Nash, you got Taylor Pyatt, you got Aaron Asham, you got all these new guys. You're putting them on lines with Richards, Gabber, Callahan, Stephon. These guys are not used to having these other guys flanking their wings.
Right.
You know, so of course they don't know their mannerisms of how they're going to, you know, be able to catch a pass, how they're going to pass the puck to them. It takes time. And like I said, I'm going to say it again. That's what camp and that's what preseason games are for, to tune up to get ready for the NHL season. The lockout has screwed these teams already.
Yes.
And we've spoke about that many times before. So.
Now, we got a good game tonight with Boston and the Rangers.
Yes, we have four games on the bill tonight.
There are four. Calgary, Vancouver, Columbus, Phoenix, and Toronto, Pittsburgh is the early game.
Yeah, Boston Rangers and Calgary Canucks are probably the headliners here.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. Well, at least for the East and West games. So.
Right.
Toronto-Pittsburgh is going to be good. You know what? Blue Jackets-Phoenix are going to be good. You know what? The Blue Jackets are I'm not entirely sure what their record is at the moment.
Hold on,
they're 1-0, actually. Oh, excuse me, 1-0-1. They have an
1-0-1, yes.
They didn't look that bad. I watched their last game. I can't remember exactly who they played, but they lost in overtime, and they didn't look that bad, Mike.
Right.
So they're not hurting from losing Rick Nash yet.
Yeah, 1-0-1. Okay, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, 1-0-1. They're 3 points. They're, Detroit, though. I mean, would you think they would – I mean, it's only been three games. We know that. But did you think Detroit would be in last place and Chicago would be 6 points up? Not many people thought that.
No, but Detroit can turn that around real fast.
Oh, quick. Absolutely, absolutely quick. Let's see. Let's just, look at some, points leaders here. Thomas Vanek from Buffalo.
Yep.
6 points. Marian Hossa, 4 goals. Tied with Winnick from the Anaheim Ducks. Josh Harding from Minnesota is the goalie leader, save percentage and goals against. Craig Anderson, Ottawa Senators, wins and shutouts. Kevin Shattenkirk, St. Louis Blues assist. names you wouldn't really think you'd see at the top of the Heat, Mike. But
after,
it's early.
After three games, correct.
Yeah, but it's early.
Yeah.
So. All right. Well, I guess we have our first infraction of the year in the NHL. Brendan Shanahan is going to be having a hearing with Braden Chen from your Flyers.
Yeah, I saw the headline on that, Jonathan. I missed the story. Was that the hit from last night's game?
Yes, that was the leaping check that he had against Devils defenseman Anton Volchenkov.
That's
nearer a fine.
Yeah, well, okay.
And does a Braden Chen suspension, does that land the Flyers 0-4?
You know, we'll see how. I saw the play live. I can understand, I suppose, why there's going to be a hearing on it. I guess I can see that.
Yeah. But the new CBA agreement gives Brendan Shanahan the option of levying a fine of up to $10,000 now.
Wow.
Maximum in the old CBA, $2,500.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I guess, being early in the season, one would think that he's going to get fined, all right? He's going to get fined because they're going to set the tone early.
Let me ask you this. $10,000 fines now. Are we going to see a lot more fines instead of suspensions?
I think this season you may, only because of the shortened season and the way that it potentially will impact upon the teams.
Yeah.
So I think, in fact, you may actually see more fining done this season because the NHL wouldn't want to be perceived that the NHL was trying to give an unfair advantage to one team over another.
Yeah. Remember, 56 suspensions last year under Shanahan.
Yes.
First year doing it.
That
is a monster, man.
That was in a full season, so one could expect it probably to be about half of that.
Probably be 85.
Yeah, watch that happen.
Season.
Yeah, then we can all scream.
Well, yeah, I think we would. Because Brendan Shanahan, he lost a lot of fans last year, let me tell you. And that was one of them. All right, well.
Seemed like every week he had another video out on the NHL.
I know it, and I love the video.
I got tired of seeing his face every time I went to NHL.com. There's another video from Brendan Shanahan. I'm like, really, dude? What do you got, your own production company?
Yeah. You know what? He must have. I mean, honestly, it looked like a robot. Same facial expression, same
stuff. Exactly. Same graphics. They just brought up the same flow charts, you know, the whole bit.
Brendan Shanahan, man. That was CGI Brendan Shanahan. That wasn't him, man.
Oh, gosh.
All right, let's talk NBA quick. Last show, we talked about the Sacramento Kings. Potential sale, the Maloof selling them to billionaire Chris Hansen and moving them back to Seattle. Well, not moving them back, but getting the team back in Seattle and renaming them to Seattle Supersonics. But here we go. Mayor Kevin Johnson of Sacramento, former Phoenix Suns point guard, is telling Seattle fans, don't celebrate too early because he's going to do everything he can to keep the Kings in California, Mike. He did it before when there was a potential of moving Sacramento to Anaheim. He did it, but that was in state. This is a little different, moving them out of state. What do you think about this?
Okay, well, I'm going to throw out a couple of questions. As I love to do, I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a moment.
I love when you do that.
So. I know, it does not mean that I'm favoring one side or another. All right, now, I want that clear.
Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't. All right, Kevin Johnson can make that statement all he wants, but what's to prevent them from making the move if they want to? All right. Look, they would not be in this situation. Sacramento really wouldn't be in the situation to begin with if the Maloofs had gotten what they wanted, which was a new stadium and a new arena.
Yes.
Okay. Now, if I'm not mistaken, what they already have available to them in Seattle is better than what's available in Sacramento.
Yes.
So wouldn't that be, you know, here we go again. This could be a situation where Sacramento is going to get held up. But in some respects, rightly so, because if you don't have the wherewithal to provide what's being requested and you can, you know, the grass is greener someplace else, well, why, you know, how are they going to prevent it? The only way you could potentially prevent it, and I don't think it's ever been successful in any sport, in any league, anywhere, what are you going to do? You're going to try to take some legal action? That's not going to work.
Well, you know what, let me, you know, talking about the stadium front first, excuse me,
go
the
ahead.
Arena front.
Go ahead.
ARCO Arena, now known as the Sleep Train Arena. If you look at arenas, this was probably one of the youngest, only being built in 1988. It's still a fairly new arena.
Yes.
It's still in very good shape. So one of those things, you know, and it seats up to about almost 18,000 people.
Correct.
I guarantee you they're not getting 18,000 people trying to buy tickets.
No.
It's the Sacramento Kings. The days of Divots, the days of Weber, that's done. They were selling out then. That was a very long time ago now, Mike. If you really think about it, that was late 90s to like maybe 2001, 2002. It's been a very, very long time now. It's been over 12 years. So, really, do you really need a new stadium that's going to just suck money out of the taxpayers' wallets?
Well, I think
because you know the Maloofs aren't going to sit there and pay for the whole thing themselves.
Well, not well, no, and that was that. That's why I found them so disgustingly despicable.
Yeah,
was because they wanted it for practically nothing. They didn't want to make any investment whatsoever.
Exactly, and they have the money to make an investment in a new arena if they want.
Damn right they do, and that's the, you know, that's why I said, you know, get them the hell out of here.
Yeah.
But what the Maloofs were requesting, if I'm not mistaken, Jonathan, if I go back and take a look at that, you know, some of the negotiations that were going on there, they wanted more of the exclusive, you know, box sorts of things, and they wanted the upper crusty sort of stuff that they're going to be able to attract the high rollers with.
Yeah.
Which apparently the Sacramento Arena is lacking in. Mm. And that's really what they wanted. Now, let's just say for a moment this new ownership group comes in, buys the team, and leaves it in Sacramento. Now, you're still dealing with the folks from Seattle, but they're going to leave the team in Sacramento. You don't think they're going to try to make the same kinds of demands and requests?
You have to wonder. I mean, listen, making the request of a new stadium is one thing. Trying to get it for free from the taxpayers of Sacramento, that's another thing.
I understand.
If they come in and say, okay, listen, we're going to fund up to 60% of this new arena, 20% comes out of taxpayers' wallets, the other 20% comes out of, you know, whichever way they do it, ticket sales, fundraising, and whatnot, that's one thing.
Right.
But I just don't see that happening. I think whoever buys this team or whoever is going to be interested in this team, they're going to move it, not because of the arena, but because of the shape that the Sacramento Kings are in by itself. This is not a winning ball club. You're not going to buy a winning ball club for $600 million, leave them at a place where you can't sell out a game, and then try to make a profit. That's not going to happen.
Okay, but wait a minute. We've seen it happen in baseball. We're losing.
Listen, you're comparing baseball to basketball, and I'm not a big baseball guy, but that's two totally different sides of the ball.
Wait a minute. You're saying it's not a winning team. That's not to say that under new ownership, it couldn't be a winning team.
Listen.
We went through years and years.
We saw Seattle going to Oakland, and we saw Oakland under new management and everything create a winning team. We've seen that.
Yes.
But are they? It just seems the Maloofs are not going to make that much of a – excuse me, make progress to have new management in Sacramento to make a winning team there.
Okay, and I'm not saying –
those days are done. I think that's gone. I think they had their winning moments with Weber and all those guys back in the late 90s.
You and I are both on the same page. The Maloofs are out of the question now, out of the picture at this point. Okay? They have no interest in making any investment in this team whatsoever. But I'm saying if you've got this new management group that's made up of, Steve Ballmer and others up there in Washington, mm-hmm. if they were to purchase this team and then make the decision to leave it sit where it is in Sacramento, you don't believe that that ownership group could turn this team around and make it a winning team again?
It's a possibility. I just don't see it happening. I think interest in teams like this, and we've seen it in the past, whether it be hockey or whatnot, is buying these teams. You don't see it in baseball, but you do see it in hockey and basketball a lot. Buying these teams who have had a track record of poor seasons for about a length of 10-plus years, buying them, moving them out, and starting over and putting them under a new name because they want to bring it to a fresh thing because they want to bring it back to either a city that had a team before and is missing a team, or to say it's never had a team before because they are basing it on ticket sales. They want to be able to fill the house no matter what shape the team is at the time.
But
you're not going to be able to Sacramento.
But you and I both recognized on Monday when we were talking about this, you and I both recognized and applauded the Sacramento audience, the Sacramento fan base there, for being loyal supporters.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you right now, you could sell that arena out again if you put a product on the court.
Oh, absolutely, but they're not putting a product out on the court.
So the Maloofs aren't. I'm saying a new ownership group that is willing to keep that team in Sacramento might be able to do that.
Nobody wants to keep him in Sacramento, though.
Why?
That beats me. But if Chris Hansen wants to buy – and listen, I hate seeing the NBA lose the Sacramento Kings. I don't like it at all. I've said that. I said it on Monday, and I said that to you privately. I hate it. I think losing the Kings is poor for the NBA, and I think it's a slap in the face to the fans in Sacramento. At the same time, I'm happy Seattle is getting another team because they should have never taken the Supersonics out of Seattle. I hated that possibly more than I hate the Kings leaving Sacramento. But
go ahead.
I think Chris Hansen is one of those guys that if he's the one that's going to buy this team and he's going to move him to Seattle, I guarantee you, just from listening to him and reading about this guy, I think he's going to eventually, you know, it's not going to be right away. I say within the next 8 years, there's going to be a winning product on the floor in Seattle. But would it take that long in Sacramento? Can whoever buys it now go through about 8 years of basically making no profit to put another winning team on the floor in Sacramento?
I'd like to see what this is great. Terrific. This is a terrific debate in many respects. And all the more reason why, Jonathan, if we could get Sacramento Mayor Kevin Johnson on the air with us, or even someone inside his office to come on with us, that would be fabulous. Because, I, for one, think that if you had yourself a new ownership management group that was committed to keeping the team in Sacramento, I think, in fact, you could be selling out that arena, and I think that they could put a team, a product on the court that could be successful in less than 8 years. I think they could do it.
Do you really think so?
Yes.
Nah. I don't think...
The problem is that we have seen such malaise and such an uncaring, selfish attitude towards this team from that current ownership group, the Maloofs, that's what everybody believes. It's perception being 95% reality.
I just don't see it, Mike. I don't see – this is not somebody buying the New York Knicks. This is not somebody buying the Los Angeles Lakers where they have a tradition, they have a history and a name of winning basketball. I don't see a new owner coming in and being able to just get these big names to come into this tiny town and, you know, enticing these big free agents to come in. And they don't have pieces to make these big trades. So it's – first and foremost, you're going to have to get the right general manager.
I'm not saying it's
going to – guy and that's going to be able to either work it by trade and also free agents. You're going to have to get a cap guy in. That's first and foremost.
I'm not saying it's going to happen overnight.
No.
I'm not saying it's going to happen overnight.
It's happened in less than 8 years. I just don't see it with the Sacramento Kings roster.
You know – oh, boy. All right. Well, I'm going to tell you, Sacramento Mayor Kevin Johnson, come on the air and tell Jonathan
he's
wrong. That's
the mayor to get him on. And
tell him he's wrong.
We hope to get him on. And remember, Seattle, they already started drafting pieces that were already on the Oklahoma City Thunder now. So this could have been a winning team in Seattle, but they moved them out. So
Yes. I hear you.
That's just a different side of the spectrum there. So.
Well, it's interesting because you make a case. But let's not forget, you know, they take this team, they move it to Seattle. All right, that's great. They change the name, make it the Seattle Sonics. The players that you're moving there are the same players you've got right now, and you seem to think that they can turn that around in a faster period of time than they can do it in Sacramento. I don't get it.
We'll see what happens. Like I said, you know what? You got a young billionaire guy who wants to get into sports very badly. He's bringing a team back to Seattle where the fans are rabid. They're going to fill the seats.
I think it's more about wanting to move the team back to Seattle than actually being caring about building a championship or even a playoff team.
No,
because
I think
if you're saying that they can do it, they could rebuild this team in Seattle, then they can rebuild this team in Sacramento the same way under the same management group. You can do it in either city. It makes no difference.
Remember, it takes fans' money to sign players. Always remember that. The fans' money is not coming in Sacramento.
Sacramento will sell that arena out if, in fact, they've got a product on the court.
Yeah. To get a product on the court, though, is what we are talking about. They can't get a product on the court. They don't have the money to do it. You go to Seattle right away, you're going to be selling out season ticket packages. You're going to be reserving seats. You're going to sell out games automatically. with the product they already have, Mike. This is what I'm
saying.
They are going to make a profit quicker in Seattle than they would in the next bunch of years in Sacramento.
Look, I'm not saying that it wouldn't require, and it's going to. I don't give a damn where it is. I don't care if they go to Seattle or they stay in Sacramento. That ownership group, that new ownership group, forget the old one. They're out of the picture. The new one may have to bite a bullet for a year or two, all right? But I'm telling you right now, they keep this thing in Sacramento. With that new ownership group, if they're willing to commit to rebuilding this team, they can just as quickly put a good product on the floor in Sacramento as they could in Seattle.
Remember, for a billionaire with a private jet, Seattle and Sacramento is like a 15-minute drive for you and I around the block.
I hear you.
He could leave it in Sacramento. There's a lot of reasons why he doesn't want to leave it in Sacramento. That's what we have to find out about.
That's my point. It's about bringing the team back. It's about bringing a team to Seattle.
He has a better chance of bringing this team back to Seattle and building a competitive team out of it in a lesser time frame than he would if he left it in Sacramento. That's what I honestly believe.
To me, that doesn't logically make any sense, but go ahead.
We agree. Once again, we always agree to disagree, but it makes sense. Think about it.
I am.
Thinking?
I am.
Because I don't smell the smoke, man.
It still doesn't make any sense.
Oh, nothing really makes sense to you, Mike, when I talk, so. All right, real quick, man. We got 4 minutes left in the show. Bring up the Lakers here. Dwight Howard, once again. Lakers lost again. Now we got rumors coming out that they might trade Dwight Howard. This is what we spoke about many, many times in the past now, Mike. Number one, I'm going to throw this out to you real quick. Would the Lakers be able to trade Dwight Howard right now? Number two, is it going to be worth it for the Lakers to trade Dwight Howard right now? Number three, are they going to be able to turn around if they don't trade Dwight Howard?
Would Dwight Howard be tradable? Yes, absolutely. All right? There's a team out there. If you're just all you're doing is picking up the contract as it exists right now, you're talking about re-signing him next year. Is he tradable? Absolutely. There'd be teams lining up right now to pick this guy up. All right? That's number one.
But they'd be willing to pick him up without a contract extension from the right out of the gate.
I hear what you're saying. Essentially, you'd be getting a rental player.
Exactly.
But
him in Philly.
So listen, write him an extension. Write him an extension.
Is he going to want to go to the team that the Lakers are going to eventually want to trade him to?
Well, does he have a no-trade clause? I don't think so.
No, he doesn't. This is what's going to stop it. If he doesn't agree to sign that extension, he's not going to be able to go. The team's not going to take him. They're not going to want to get rid of quality players for a rental player.
Listen, there's a team out there. Look, you're talking about picking up now at this point.
There's a team out there that's going to want to take a rental player.
It's half a season. It's a half a season salary that you're picking up on this guy. And listen, if you want to sign him an extension, you want to write him an extension walking in the door, go right ahead and do it. I would. I'd take the chance on that one.
Yeah. But is the team going to want to take a chance for a half a year on this guy? If he's not going to sign an extension, and you know the Lakers are going to want quality back for him.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to go someplace for half a year. I think he'd want the extension on the front end walking in. So any team that's going to make the offer is going to have to be serious.
Okay, and if you see that he wants to go to New Jersey, what if all of a sudden, boom.
You mean Brooklyn?
Wants him back.
You mean Brooklyn?
Or Cleveland wants him. Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, Brooklyn. You know what it is. Objecting to me.
Brooklyn's not going to make the offer. I think they're already capped out, aren't they?
They're going to get rid of somebody big then.
I think Brooklyn's capped out, if I'm not mistaken. But,
well, they're capped out right now, but, I mean, they have a lot of money riding on their bench. So.
Listen,
the Brooklyn Nets bench, they're not going to be able to get Dwight Howard for what they have on their bench.
We got to open with this one on Friday, I'll be honest with you. We got to get more into the Dwight Howard thing, because I got more to say about it, Jonathan.
Yeah, we'll just go in depth on the rosters of some of these teams to see who's capable of getting Dwight Howard away from the Los Angeles Lakers.
We'll take a look at that in the next 2 days.
Absolutely. For today, Mike, good show.
Absolutely, lively.
Love arguing with you. It's always fun.
It is.
I'll curse you out when we get off the air. And thanks to our listeners for listening in. And I guess we'll all see you on Friday.
You got it.
All right. Thanks, everybody.